and welcome to Total Nerd List, the podcast where we make lists and be nerds. I'm Shane.
I'm Reggie.
And I'm Liesl von Trapp. I mean, Tom.
Tomoth.
This week, we're going to nerd out on books.
Books, like the TV Guide magazine and People.
Well, those are magazines, but yeah. The kind of books. But no, we're talking about some of our favorite books that we'd like to read, I guess, all throughout life.
Mine is basic, just to warn y'all.
And this will probably be the first of many book episodes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. We're going to focus on favorite books.
Yes.
Just like book. It doesn't have to be a series or anything for this one. We're just...
Or it can be one in a series, because some series are only good for one book.
This is true. This is very
book
true.
Book four. No. My favorite
of one of the series is book four. Well,
before we get into all of that, what have you guys been nerding out on?
Well, for me this week, I've done a little bit more video gaming. Still haven't played much on my Switch, but I've been having a PlayStation heavy week. I've been playing that Days Gone game, which is like an open world zombie game, and you also have to fight people. I thought I was almost done with it. I told my whole family that I was about to beat the game. I was like, okay, I'm home from work. I'm going to go beat my game. Everybody leave me alone. Nobody bother me. Went upstairs, turned the game on, did the final thing that I thought was the final thing, and then a whole new section of the map opened up. And it is not the end of the game. So I'm still playing that, but I also got to finally pick up Resident Evil Village, which everybody knows how much I love that game series. I don't know if I'm halfway or over halfway through the game, but I do know I have quite a bit more to do. But I have taken down a couple of the lords. Try to no spoilers for anything, but it is fun.
I saw you shoot a giant fan this morning and then smash a goat statue.
Mm-hmm. The goat statue is the collectibles that you do along the way. Like in RE7, it was like little bobblehead football Louisiana State figurines. Mm-hmm. And in this one, they're like little wooden things, little wooden goats. The game's been good. It's been action-y, and there was one part that was terrifying with the dolls in the dollhouse.
Oh, I love creepy dolls.
Anytime there's dolls involved, it's always super scary. But this one was almost too scary. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the dark, and there was this grotesque monster that made sounds that were just terrifying. But anyway, I mean, like I said, I'm going to try to avoid spoilers for that. But that's pretty much all I've been doing this week.
Nice. How would you say it stacks up to other Resident Evils?
I know everybody is butthurt because there's not really zombies in this, which, I mean, there kind of are. Like, there are things brought back from the dead. So, I mean, that itself
That's
a
zombie.
Is a zombie. But there's, like, werewolves and other types of monsters in this, and like I know the arguments on both sides that Resident Evil is a zombie game because that's what the monsters were in the first game. Technically, the monsters in the first game were bioweapons. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the whole point of Resident Evil has always been, is that it wasn't just zombies, but there were the snakes and the hunters and the mutated sharks and the blah, 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 blahs and the lickers and RE2 and, you know, all of the additional monsters. So, I mean, it's just a natural progression of going from a virus that can mutate to what it, you know, the all out monsters that they become now. I like it. I think it's really good. I think it's a great addition to the storyline. I am a little bit confused on what's happening with Chris Redfield right now. And as far as like the story goes, I just haven't, you know, gotten all the answers yet. Mm-hmm. But I like it.
Does it crack the top three so far, or
of like my favorite Resident Evil games?
Well, he's not done yet.
I'm not done, so I can't say that. But it's definitely up there.
Okay.
I really enjoyed Resident Evil 5, not because it was a great story or anything like that, because that was the first co-op game that they did, and Corey and I played that until we had every single thing unlocked completely. Mm-hmm. I really liked Code Veronica, because that was the one that my mom and I played together. Well, my mom watched me play all of them, but that's the one where she really got into it. And I really like Zero, because that has Rebecca Chambers as a playable character, and she's my favorite Resident Evil character.
Nice.
But 7 was really good, and this is not a bad sequel to 7. And I do believe that this ending of this game will set up and lead directly into a 9. So I'm excited about that.
Very nice.
Tom, what have you done this week?
Well, as probably everyone who follows us on Instagram knows, I kind of have a one-track mind. I've been really into Pokemon lately.
Mm-hmm.
Been playing the Crown Tundra expansion and just recently discovered Max Raid Lairs. And those are super fun. It's almost kind of like a little D&D quest with Pokemon where you can have like a party and you can choose which direction you go through the labyrinth, and then and you pick up different Pokemon on the way. And in the end, you fight a legendary one, and you hopefully pick up an advantageous Pokemon to help you with that on the way. I don't like that you can't choose one of your own Pokemon for it. You have to, like, rent Pokemon, basically. but it's been really cool catching a bunch of the legendary Pokemon from games that I... because I basically took a break from Gold and Silver all the way to Sword and Shield.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly that's just because I didn't have a DS or anything. I went from... I actually never played Ruby and Sapphire, even though I had a Game Boy Advance. But those are really fun right now. Love catching the legendary Pokemon and giving them fun nicknames.
Well, and it's also cool because you can catch those legendaries with the different special balls.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could use a friendship ball to catch a Suicune.
Yeah. Don't have to waste a Master Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've enjoyed that part of it, and definitely want to. Reggie and I have been talking about doing a raid together for a week now, and haven't done it yet, but we'll probably get on that. And then really, what's been taking up most of my bandwidth lately is I recently have started learning to coach pole vault.
Ooh.
As many of you know, I'm a track coach. Usually I coach distance runners.
And, that's what I did.
that's what I ran. I ran distance.
Our pole vaulters, have been in need of some coaching. And so it's not something I've done before, but it's something I've been learning about all week and have been taking crash courses on, and basically have dedicated all of my thought to learning that. And just, it's really neat learning, especially, I feel like I've read everything I can read about training distance runners, and it's gotten kind of, learning that stuff has gotten kind of stale because it's basically just reading different books on the same thing. So it's been fun to learn something new, and just the physics of teaching someone to plant a pole in the ground to take flight is pretty neat how it works.
You gonna teach us how to do it too?
Yeah.
Gonna bring some poles and what we can pole vault over my creek in the backyard.
Pole vault. Yes. I mean that's how that sport started basically. It was basically people crossing rivers. But that's basically been my week.
Very nice.
And Shane, what have you done?
So I have continued playing Pokemon Snap, and I've actually made some progress. I've unlocked more areas.
You're not going to snap on us this week, are you?
No. Okay. I mean, I thought about that because we got behind a tractor on the way over. And I say we because I was directly behind Tom. But it was a tractor kind of being hauled, so it wasn't really the tractor, but that's where we live. So that happens. But no, I was excited. I did go online. I'm like, how do you access new areas? What am I not getting? And so I looked that up, and I realized kind of how... I don't want to say, like, easy, but it is kind of easy to access new areas in that game. And that's what I've been doing on Pokemon Snap. Still playing Animal Crossing. I also am fighting with myself about getting Miitopia, which recently just came out for the Switch.
Ooh.
I have the 3DS version, which I actually really love. Like, I did not realize I would get in that game so much. Kind of still haven't finished it, and I need to. Because the Switch came out, and all of a sudden that was my shiny new toy.
What's Miitopia?
Miitopia is like an RPG game where your Miis are the characters, and they can become, like, you can be a swordsman, you can be a cleric, you can be a wizard, you can be a cat.
meow.
Yes.
So that's what the Mii characters from Super Smash are based on?
Well, I mean, like, the Mii characters are, like, the Nintendo, like, your Mii character. Like, most everyone makes one of themselves.
They're like an avatar. Like, yeah. Your own personal avatar.
I know, Miis are just, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, they have, like, the Mii Swordsman and the Mii...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think that's just a way for you to
use your Mii in the game.
And then have a specific fighting style.
Okay.
Yes, so I don't know. I want it, but it's also technically the same game. They just added a few other things to it.
Well, if you got it, then you wouldn't have to worry about beating the previous one. You can only worry about focusing and beating this one.
True, but I need to beat the previous one. As I still haven't created that many Miis on my Switch either.
Yeah, I have one.
I think I have Mii.
I have the Mii. I recently updated him, so he has demon red eyes and is laying on his side now.
But I also recently retrieved my Bop-It from storage, and it worked when I got it out after 10 plus years. And then I guess the batteries die. So I got new batteries, put them in there. It worked again. And then last night I picked it up just to hit it and it didn't work again. I don't know what's going on with it.
Maybe the batteries are just loose.
I'm going to check it. I'm going to see what I can do to get that fixed.
Get those lithium ion batteries.
I think if I can get it working again, the three of us should see if we can bop it the longest. Because my bop it has like the twist it, the flick it, the spin it, bop it, and the pull it.
We should totally do that and like do like a little mini soda bus.
Yes.
See who can go the
longest. More video.
Well, that sounds like a good week.
It has, yeah. That's essentially been my week.
Nice. Watch any Fitzsimmons?
On YouTube. I have to go back and relive their pain because that's mostly what it was. But
now, is your list for books going to be nothing but books based about Fitz and Simmons?
Yes.
Yes, that's it. And all,
all written by me.
Yeah, his fanfic that he wrote.
But no, my book list, which we will get to right now, I kind of catered it to some of the books that I really first read in the first part of my life in school. So they're all Clifford. No.
The Red Dwarf.
Spot.
The Spot Clifford books. And the Berenstain Bears. Or Stein. How's it pronounced?
Which universe are you from? That's what it's dependent on.
I don't know. Actually, I always said Steam Berenstain Bears.
I think I said Berenstain Bears, too.
I think it's always been Berenstain Bears, but it's just spelled Berenstain Bears. Right?
Then where's Berenstain come from?
No, I think, so the thing is that at some point in our lives, something happened and our reality shift and we jumped to a different universe.
Yes.
Which is why, like, do you remember the Sinbad movie where he's a genie?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
It doesn't exist.
It does.
He says, he himself has said that that movie does not exist. What exists is a movie called Kazam starring Shaq as a genie. I remember clear as day a movie called Shazam.
Yes, same.
With Sinbad as a genie.
I do not. I remember Kazam.
Well, you are from you're from Universe B.
You're from the wrong one.
With Sir Shaquille O'Neal.
We had a crisis of infinite Earth, and now we're all in this new one, and it's not
well.
Right.
And that's what it's called, the Mandela effect.
Yeah,
and because people remember him dying in prison, but he didn't actually die in prison.
Wait, are we talking about Jesus or Shaq?
Mandela.
Mandela, okay.
And then that's where the name of it comes from. And it's stuff like Pikachu's tail having black on the tip of it when it first originally started as a Pokemon.
No.
Never had. I vaguely remember that. But the Shaq and the Berenstain Bears is what I know for sure.
And apparently it's Sinbad.
Another one is Interview with the Vampire.
Interview with a Vampire.
It's Interview with
the
Vampire.
Yeah, it's always been A.
No, it's With the Vampire.
Wait, is it?
Yeah, it's The Vampire.
Oh.
But see, again, we changed universes
at
some point, Shane. When I was a kid, it was Interview with a Vampire.
Listeners at home, you should Google the Mandela Effect. It's actually a pretty interesting neuroscience.
It's weird. It's really weird.
It's a pretty interesting thing in neuroscience. It's just, I mean, basically our memories are not video cameras like we think they are. They're cells that basically work together and piece together
sometimes.
Reality.
Yeah.
Or are we hopped universes, which is what I'm going to choose to believe.
I would love to be in a multiverse.
We are. I have a friend. I know this is off topic, but I have a friend and she said that she believes deja vu is that we live in there's infinite us's and there's different stuff that we've done and every choice makes a new version of us, and there's a world where instead of turning left, I turned right. Well, she believes that deja vu is one of those other instances of us. We are experiencing something that they already did, which is what deja vu is.
Ooh,
and ever since
that.
She told me that, we were like drunk in college, and she said that, and it has stuck with me since I heard that. I was like, Yeah, man. Like, we are. Yeah.
It's like that episode of Community with the different timelines and the worst timeline.
We're in the darkest timeline.
The darkest timeline. But we lost the train of thought.
We did. We're on books.
Yes.
Shane, tell us about your Clifford books.
All right. Starting at the top of my list is actually a book called Wait Till Helen Comes by Mary Downing High. I think that's her name. Yeah, High. I always want to say Hugh, but I think it's High. Maybe it's that parallel universe thing. Maybe it's Hugh and another one. But it is a ghost story, and it's one of the very first ghost stories that I read, so pre-Goosebumps, everyone. And it is about a little girl who befriends a ghost, but she's not the main character. Her older siblings are, and I honestly can't remember if the older sibling is a boy or girl, or it might have been one or the other, and they had a friend of that gender. But pretty much, she's a little kid and gets treated like a little kid. So she befriends a ghost, and when she doesn't like the way they treat her, she's always just like, wait till Helen comes. And it turns out Helen is a spirit that drowned in their nearby lake, and she's trying to lure the little girl into the lake.
Cool.
Yes.
Does Helen help the little girl get her revenge?
Helen, I don't know. Like, the little girl has an attitude problem, and so does Helen. Mm. I was just like, let her go. Let them live in the lake together.
Sassy ghosts. I don't know why they're always so grumpy about being dead.
Yes, so aside from, you know, Goosebumps and the scary stories to tell in the dark, one of my actual first books that was a ghost story that I read, fell in love with it. She's still writing in these last recent years. I don't know if anything's come out in the 2020s yet, but up to 2018 and 19, she's produced new books that I need to read.
That's cool.
I think I would make an awesome ghost. That'd be a fun profession.
Wait, are you not a ghost? Guys, I gotta tell you a secret.
I used to look at my friends in high school and be like, you need to wake up.
You need to wake up.
Oh, you need to wake up.
You're terrible. That's a good way to freak somebody out.
Oh, I've got to start for you guys on another day about that. Or just after the podcast. Moving right along, on my list, coming up next are the Goosebumps series.
Goose Pimples.
I definitely have not read them all. But the ones that I liked most when I was younger... I really like the Slappy ones, but Slappies were always checked out.
Night of the Living
Ventriloquist, yeah, the Living Dummy. But I also really like The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight, and I think the first one I actually had to read, because all the ones I wanted were checked out in our library, was Phantom of the Auditorium. Which at the time I knew I wanted to be an actor, so I'm like, well, this is about theater, so yes.
Speaking of being a ghost the whole time.
That one. I have a confession about Goosebumps. I was more obsessed with looking at the covers than reading the actual books. I thought the covers were so cool, and especially the textured writing. And I actually had a subscription to Goosebumps when I was little.
What?
Oh, I hate you.
I hope I still have all of them. I need to check my parents' house.
Dude, find them, please. Yes. I actually have been actively looking for Goosebump books. I have a
have
small,
you?
Yeah, I have a
Me
small
too.
Collection upstairs. Cause Goosebumps is what got me to read. Like, I always had trouble reading. I was held back when I was younger. I was on a slower learning curve than everybody else. I had a lot of stuff going on in my life, and I could read. Like, I wasn't illiterate and like dumb, but I wouldn't read because I wasn't into it. Goosebumps got me into reading.
Very nice.
I love Goosebumps.
I decided for my September book, for my read a book a month thing, I'm going to try to read as many Goosebumps books as I can get my hands on. And I own a few. Most of them are Slappies, because Slappies are my favorite, and I do at least want to own all the Slappies. But I also kind of started looking at them, and I'm like, I kind of want them all now as an adult.
Do you remember the big thick book that had the three-headed monster on the cover of it, and it was multiple stories, and when you opened it would scream?
Yes.
Do you remember the cover where the kid was the PB&J sandwich? That one scared me so much.
I think
much.
That one was one of the choose-your-own endings. Because there were two lines of Goosebump books. There were the choose-your-own ending ones, and then there were the actual just, like, books. My first book was TikTok, You're Dead, which was one of the choose-your-own ending books. And the choose-your-own ending ones had holographic covers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was it then.
Because, yeah, I don't really remember that one. I remember the B one really well, even though I've never read it. But every time you look it up, it's the first one that comes up now.
The kid
who's
giant
a bee,
bee
yeah.
with the kid face and then the bee body. Yep.
Maybe if we get enough followers on Instagram for Halloween, we could do like an Orson Welles style reading of Goosebumps.
It wouldn't take very long. As adults, they're not long books now.
No.
But as a kid, I mean, it took me a week to read one.
Same. But that was, I love it. It had to be on my list. It's very nostalgic for me. But moving right along to another book that I actually read in school. And at the time, I don't think I liked it, but I really did get into it. And I remember it very clearly now, certain parts of it. But it's The Kid in the Red Jacket by Barbara Park.
Kid in the Red Jacket. Oh, my goodness.
You had
oh, my
too,
goodness. What happened in that book? Wasn't there like
a was a new kid.
He was a new kid. And wasn't there like a really, really awful bullying part of it?
Not awful.
Didn't he get like bound and gagged?
No.
Tom, I don't know what kind of book you're reading.
There was some book that we read in fourth grade, and I thought it was Kid in the Red Jacket, that like literally made my fourth grade teacher cry in front of all of us.
Really?
Yeah. No, it was because there was like an awful instance of bullying.
I thought that wasn't that like maybe Maniac McGee or something?
Maybe.
Everyone went wild over those books, and we read the first one in fourth grade, and I was like, I don't like it.
Maniac McGee?
Yes.
I've also never heard of that one either.
Kid in the Red Jacket.
But no, he was a new kid, just moved to a new school, and I mean, I think there might have been a bully that made fun of him, but like, he wore a red jacket. And that's kind of what I remember, because I remember his father telling him, like, how to make friends, and his, you know, it was a very dad answer, just like, walk up and be like, hey, fellas, mind if I sit here?
Hello, fellow youth.
Yeah.
Kid in the Red Jacket, not to be confused with The Kid in the Purple Socks from Harriet the Spy.
Oh, yeah. Totally two different kids. But I don't know, for some odd reason, that one just stuck with me all throughout life. And I still remember certain sections of the book. I can see the page in my head.
It's funny how books like that we had to read, like, I remember having to read, like, Julie of the Wolves.
Oh, yeah.
And there was something about, like, The Witch of Black Pond.
Oh, we didn't get to read that one.
Like that. I can't remember. They both of those were in fifth grade, though. I do remember that.
Maybe like Island of a Thousand Dolphins or something.
Blue Dolphins.
Blue Dolphins. Was that what it was?
Blue Dolphins. Yeah, that one.
I didn't like that book either.
I liked it okay.
Boring.
But yeah, Kid in the Red Jacket. Next up is actually a collection of poetry, A Light in the Attic by Shel Silverstein.
Oh.
Which was, well, I guess probably honestly one of my first introductions to poetry, and it was very humorous, and they're all very funny little poems. And I remember just thinking how funny it was, because the babysitter poem was about how the babysitter sat on the kids.
That was part of the same book series as, like, Where the Sidewalk Is,
yes,
and stuff like that. Those were hot commodities in my school. Mm-hmm. Like, those were always checked out.
Hot commodities.
Clea.
But yeah, so that's the book that got me into poetry. And I do love reading some poetry.
It's pronounced poetry.
Poetry. But finally, number one on my list, when I was in school, because we had to do those class books like The Kid in the Red Jacket and Island of Blue Dolphin, or was it just Blue Dolphin? Who knows? But I didn't really like to read that much. So when I go to the library, I purposely choose like nature books with lots of pictures or something like that. And of course, this is pre-Goosebumps. But I did find one that I actually read, and it's called The Pinballs by Betsy Byers. And it's about three kids who are in essentially an orphanage because either their parents didn't want them, and one of them was there because he lived with two old ladies that were twins, but they were so old that they were getting hurt. You know, they were getting up there in age where they couldn't take care of him. And I don't know, that book just struck with me, and I love it.
Hmm.
And it was about them bonding and becoming friends and becoming their own little family.
Was it just like a book about them and their lives, or was it like an adventure book? Did they...
No, it was about their lives in the orphanage.
Sounds...
It was kind of sad,
sounds sad.
But I really, really loved it. And I need to get my hands on a copy now just to put it in my collection, and that's one I probably would reread.
Nice.
Love it.
Oh, nostalgia.
Yes.
Books from when we were
children.
So
that's my list. I have one honorable mention, which is The Chronicles of Vladimir Todd, which is a young adult book about a vampire that I did not discover until later on in life. And it was one when I first started getting back into reading. That was a series I picked up and read instantly and realized I do actually like reading.
Nice.
Other things other than Goosebumps and scary stories.
Well, what do we have next?
Well, since we're talking about books this week, I sat down with two authors, and we will get to hear about their novels. The first one is Mr. Barry K. Nelson, who is the author of the Mackenzie Falls series and a separate book called Evil Walks. And I had the privilege of sitting down with him and interviewing him about his books.
Very nice. We're going to take a listen right now.
Yes.
Hey, everyone. I have had the privilege of sitting down with Mr. Barry Nelson here. He is a sci-fi author, and we're going to interview him about some of his published works. Hi, Barry.
Hi. How you doing? Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for sitting down with us. I believe you might have heard our interview last season with author Mason Blevins. And I was very thrilled to hear you ask us if we wanted to interview potential authors. And the writer in me was like, absolutely, 100%. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I guess we'll begin. The first thing we'd like to ask all of our guests or interviewees, what are a few things you nerd out on?
Well, Xbox games, a little too much. Comic book collecting, and I collect action figures.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah. Any particular favorite, like X-Men or anything like that, or Star Trek, something like that?
What, figures or comics?
Either or, both.
Comics, I'm in the Marvels, heavily in the Marvels.
Very nice.
Not too much DC, just the Batman. That's the only DC title I...
He is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Marvels, my favorites are the Hulk, Spider-Man, and the X-Men.
Absolutely great. And the X-Men are my favorite. Cyclops is my favorite Marvel hero.
Yeah, mine's Wolverine. I mean, who doesn't like Wolverine?
Yeah. Right? Uh-huh. Excellent. Thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about, you wanted to speak today about two books, The McKenzie Files, is that correct?
Yes.
And that's your series. And then there's a standalone book that you've written called Evil Walks.
Evil Walks, yes.
Perfect. Can you tell us a little bit about those two, I guess the series and the book?
Yeah, well, my series, McKenzie Files, it's a sci-fi series. I kind of look at it as kind of like a cross between maybe Star Trek and X-Men.
Very.
The setting takes place in centuries in their future. Mm-hmm. So there's a pirate outbreak, and they force human race to leave Earth and establish a group of colony worlds in a distant star system. And life goes on pretty much. You know, human race rebuilds itself. Then we're at war with an alien race called the Breelak, and they introduce these genetically engineered people, life forms. I call them Reploids. They look human. Some of them are like regular humans, but some of them have superpowers. And my main character, Colin McKenzie, he has electrical powers. And electrical magnetic powers, he can control machines. He can reshape anything that's basically electrically conductive.
Very cool.
Diane Christie, she's kind of like the Hulk, female Hulkish powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Human strength. Kelly Litton, he basically has fire powers. You know, he creates fire, stuff like that. And
this is your series, correct?
The McKenzie Files? My series, yeah. Yeah, I have McKenzie Files book one and the McKenzie Files book two, where they face a group of evil Reploids called the Enforcers.
Mm-hmm.
Older guys, he has telekinetic powers. Inferno, he's powers similar to Kelly's. He like super heat, super fire powers.
Mm-hmm.
Shrapnel, he's a unique character, one of my favorites. He's kind of like cross between a pig and a porcupine, but his skin is like covered with metal. He touches the metal surface and like spikes come out of his body. Then he can like explode.
Very nice. And does the exploding hurt him in some ways? Do you have to like regenerate after that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, then there's book three, Obliteration, where they meet one of their most powerful enemies, a D-Boy, their destroyer. She's kind of like, a Hulk type character. Then my most recent title, McKenzie Files book four, Maximum D-Boy, where they have their final battle against D-Boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm trying to go like 30 books into the series.
30?
Yeah.
Wow, yes. That's very ambitious. But once you get readers, one thing I always hate about series is that they always like eventually end after like five or six at best.
You should try to carry it as far as you can.
Like that.
Yeah, thanks.
So what about Evil Walks? Hmm? I'm sorry, hmm? Cut off. Evil Walks?
And then there's my standalone book, Evil Walks. It's kind of based in the city of Pittsburgh. Character in Sandman, he's kind of like an evil demonic character.
Uh-huh.
You can tell him one of your dreams or nightmares, he'll grant you a wish. But, you know, like the old saying goes, be careful what you wish for, because the wishes basically backfiring people.
Oh, no.
He mainly deals with evil characters, you know, like criminals, drug dealers and stuff. They come to him, they have problems. You know, they want to get away from the cops or get revenge on somebody. Wish, but, you know, the wishes basically don't end up the way you want.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I apologize for that noise. That always happens to us, but that's all right.
No problem.
Those sound like really excellent reads, and I really love, especially with Mackenzie Falls and both with Evil Walks, you've built your own worlds inside of those novels. And I love world building as an author myself. It's one of my favorite things to do. So can you tell us about anything that might have served as inspiration for the series and or the novel?
Oh, like I said, basically Star Wars, Star Trek, and, you know, superheroes such as, you know, X-Men and Avengers. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like my loose version of the Avengers, the X-Men.
Very cool. I definitely, I too, when I watch things, get inspired and I'm like, I want to do something kind of similar, build my own.
Yeah. I'm also, right now, I'm doing a graphic novel version of book one, Mackenzie Files.
Ooh.
And after that, I'm kind of going to try to get the an animated version for anime.
You know, that is very cool. Yeah. Can you, because I know this is not like one of the questions I sent you ahead of time, but working on the graphic novel, how's that been for you? Because I know that's probably a little different than writing the typical novels that you and I are both probably used to.
Yeah, it's coming along. I'm halfway through it. It seems like it takes a little bit longer because, you know, I'm, you know, instead of drawing, I'm doing like a computer animation. And so you have to put
characters
in different poses and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then, you know, put the, you know, the text or the, you know, the speech.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah, it's coming along. I'm expecting to get it done maybe the end of July.
Oh, wow. That would be really cool to see. So, did you have anything specific as for your inspiration for Evil Walks, or is it still kind of all like the kind of like nerd things that kind of inspired Mackenzie Falls?
Well, that the concept just came right off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
A shadowy character just, you know, grants people wishes.
Very cool. And sometimes it's just how writing works. You just think of it and you get it down on paper so you can keep that idea fresh. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your publishing process?
Well, I first tried to get the Mackenzie Falls book one published 10 years ago. It was very hard. You know,
it is.
Because when you're a first time publisher, you get tons and tons of rejections. I got a stack of rejection letters about 5 inches thick.
Oh, wow.
But I kept going and kept going at it.
God.
Then I finally got accepted by Lucrota Publishing in 2009. Then Lucrota, they basically went out of business. Then I then I got published under Penumbra Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they went out of business. You know, one of the pitfalls of being a small publisher. Now I'm under Dreaming Big Publications.
Very cool. You know, third time's the charm, I hope.
Yeah.
But that's important for our listeners. If any of them out there are also writers, rejection comes with the job.
It
sucks, but, you know, and it's like with acting too and writing both. Rejection's unfortunately a big part of it, but you kept it up and you found another publisher. And when that went under, you found another one. That is really awesome.
Yes, it was hard at first. Then as the time goes along, you get the experience, you know, track record of selling. You know, it's easier. Because when I got to hook up with Dreaming Big, it only took me about a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So general writing question, what time of day do you write best? Are you a night owl or early bird, midday, or?
Mainly at night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because when I was younger, I could stay up until maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, do my writing, you know, then go to bed, or should I say take a nap until like 5 o'clock and get to work. Yeah, I can still kind of do that. But, you know, I since I'm older, I go to bed a little earlier.
Same.
Yeah.
I never, like, I do my best writing in the morning. It's always been that way for me. I can never, like, I've done it at night, but I don't know. For me, it just works better in the morning. So I'm always fascinated by other people who especially can write at night before bed, because my body's just, I want to go to bed, but my brain's like, no, we have to get the story out.
Yeah. I don't know why, but yeah, it seems like my best inspiration comes at night.
I definitely understand that. I mean, some of mine have come from dreams. I know that helps that's a big inspiration for some authors. What about you? Is that how it is for you, or is
that was just inspiration?
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. So we touched on this earlier with the Mackenzie Falls series, 30 books.
Yeah. Yeah, if I can live long enough.
Very nice. And you want number 30 to be the last? Do you think there could be like 34, 35, 31?
No, I think 30 should be the last.
I like round numbers too. That is definitely something to look forward to. And that's a long time to live with those characters. So that sounds really fun.
Yes.
All right. And where can we find your work? Where can we find your series and your novel, purchase, buy, or?
Oh, you can find them on Amazon, or you can go to the Dreaming Big Publications, the website, mainly on Amazon.
Amazon is huge, and it's very cool that you have it out there on that mass market media.
and other places like Goodreads, Barnes and Noble.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And we can look under Mackenzie Falls or Evil Walks, or maybe your name, Barry Nelson.
Barry K. Nelson.
There you have it, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today, Barry. I definitely appreciate it as a fellow writer. And I encourage everyone, check out a series if you're into sci-fi, correct?
Yes.
If you're into sci-fi, definitely give these books a check out. And yeah, now we'll get back to the podcast. Thanks, guys.
Yes, be sure to check out his book, Mackenzie Falls series, and...
The Evil... What'd you say it was?
Evil Walks.
Evil Walks.
Yes.
Evil Walks, like walks, or like evil, like cooking walks?
Cooking walks, Tom.
Oh, of course. It's sci-fi. It's about, you know, an evil walk that comes to life.
I mean, they made a book about a car that came to life. An evil walk can't be behind. Well, that was fun.
It was. So, Tom, what's on your list? Or no.
Doesn't matter. We can do Tom or me. Paper, rock, scissors.
I will jump in because I am ready to go. So a lot of mine, and I'm pretty sure we're going to have just another episode of favorite books, because the amount of books that have come up in my mind since Shane alone shared his list.
All those Cliffords.
Well, we'll call this one Volume 1.
Volume 1. So a lot of mine are from later in life, and I think Reggie and I have a very similar experience with reading, in the sense that, you know, I feel like I'm super ADHD, and I feel like people acted like I like wasn't smart or like couldn't read or something, but it was literally just if you gave me something that interested me, I would read it in one sitting. And so that's how I feel about books. You know, the accelerated reader program, do you remember that, where you would like read a book and answer questions, and if you got a certain score you got a pizza party? That was like the most humiliating experience of my entire life, because
I only ever did that one time and got to actually go to the party.
It's one of those things that had great intentions but just completely demoralized me as a child, because it was like, here, read these books you don't care about and answer questions about them, and then we'll judge your intelligence based on how you do on this, instead of just giving you something you enjoy.
Accelerated reader is not welcomed on this podcast.
Rant over. The only cool part about accelerated reader was the cool little colors that they assigned in the library. You remember that?
We didn't have colors.
Like each book was based on the level, had like a little color on the binding. It must have been after you left Hardin.
I was at your school, Tom.
I keep forgetting.
Wow.
I assume that just since you're
I was at another school where you had to just go pick a book, and then they would tell you if it's accelerated reader or not, and then it would always be it's not, and then I would just kind of roll my eyes and check it out anyway.
There was a section, like the accelerated reader books were all in its own little part of the library, but I always cheated with that. I always did the Harry Potter books, because it reset every year. So you could just redo the Harry Potter ones. And those were like 20, 25 points a piece.
You know, someone made a ton of money off of accelerated reading.
Scarring children for their lives.
Yeah.
It's probably why I have a hard time reading, honestly, is because I feel the pressure from that.
Yeah. Good intentions, but...
Bad execution.
Bad execution. But a lot of mine are from later, from recently, and a lot of them are kind of coaching books. But my first one is Anatomy for Runners. That one is, I mean, basically talks about all of the different, all of the physics involved in running, all of the characteristics of different tissues like tendons and muscles and bones and all that, and how certain things cause, you know, your body to break down faster, how much your body can tolerate. I really, so like my first year coaching, I kind of, you know, went into it as expecting to be kind of on the sidelines learning from other people. And then some things happened where I kind of got thrust into having a lot more responsibility than I expected. And part of my frustration was, I had a lot of injured runners that I just felt completely helpless, about. And, so like during an off season, I basically spent the entire time just learning about injuries, learning about, what causes them, what parts of your form. And so this book had a big influence on me as a coach, because just it kind of helped me, be able to help my runners a bit better. Next one is Bad Science. Oh, and I didn't say the author. Anatomy of Runners is by Jay Dickery. Bad Science by Ben Goldacre. This is, as I talked about in earlier episodes, I'm a huge skeptic, and that's and a big believer in science. And basically, the book Bad Science is a book of picking apart bad science to explain how good science works. And it really changed my way of seeing the world reading this book alone, and got me into the whole like skeptics movement. And basically the way, you know, people look at science and act like it's this authority that can't be questioned. And if science is wrong, then, you know, like we just need to throw out all of science. Like if it's wrong once, but at the end of the day, the whole point of that book is science is a method for learning about the universe, and it's a self-correcting method. Mm-hmm. And that's just, that really shapes how I view the world, in the sense that like, it's less about authorities being right all the time and more about, you know, a method that constantly scrutinizes itself and constantly tries to get better. And that's how I feel about, you know, learning about the world, is you always have to scrutinize it. You can't just accept things at face value. So that book really, in the last like 3-4 years of my life has shaped my view of the world. And I wish I had found it sooner, especially because it kind of goes into a lot of stuff that would have helped me in argumentative writing in college. Cause it's, I mean, a lot of the skeptics movement is about being logically coherent and everything. Next book, Captain Underpants. Yeah, two science books and then Captain Underpants.
Now, this was a recent book for you, right?
No. This was a book that I... This was like one of the first books. And when we do favorite book series, I'll talk about a different book series that got me into reading. But Captain Underpants is one of those books that got me into reading. And the reason it's on my list is because, you know, being an ADHD kid who struggled in school, I have an awesome mother who I probably caused way too much stress for when I was in school. But, you know, looking back, she did everything she could to find ways for me to enjoy things that I had to do, like reading and math and all that stuff. And this was one of the books that she found for me that made me actually enjoy reading and like have a love for reading when I thought, you know, I hated reading. So, you know, that book always just makes me think of my mom and how she worked extremely hard for me when I was little.
Aww.
Next is Tuesdays with Maury. I had to read this book. I took Sociology of Death and Dying in college. It was required reading, And, you know, it's just basically a book about someone. It's by Mitch Albom, and he visits his, basically he has a favorite sociology professor in college, and they fall out of touch. And then when they get back in touch, he finds out his favorite sociology professor has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is just a terrible disease. Mm-hmm. Basically, your body just stops communicating with, or your brain stops communicating with your body, and eventually you kind of just drown in your own lungs. And it's basically him going and talking to his teacher while he's terminally ill over the years. And it got me in my feelings. And
right in the fifis.
Recently, my grandmother passed away, and I was there for her last days. And if I hadn't read that book, I think I would have had a completely different view of that process, but it really helped me and walked me through my grandmother's last days. And just, you know, great questions answered in that book about like what life should mean, what your death should mean, and how you should feel about the, you know, it's an inevitable thing, death and taxes. So that book just touched me in a big way in college, and then again recently in the last few weeks. And then the last book on my list, another science book, is Science of Running by Steve Magnus. It's one of the books that really helped me out as a coach. Really helped me get into the mindset I have now as a coach. Brought some new ideas to light and new ways of motivating, you know, athletes as well as just knowing all about the nitty gritty of the science when it comes to training athletes and everything. And that he's actually the author that turned me on to the book Bad Science, which like I said, had a big play on my view of the world. So this started as a coaching book that eventually influenced me as a person as well. So that's why it's on my list.
Very cool.
And then my honorable mentions. Did y'all ever read the Stinky Cheese Man book?
I did not. I don't think I've heard of it. I
don't think so.
It's a book. It's like the Stinky Cheese Man, and it's a book of like spoofs of fairy tales. So like the Stinky Cheese Man is a spoof of the Gingerbread Man.
That is a little familiar now that you say that.
And it's just like absurdist versions of like fairy tales. And so like instead of Chicken Little, they have Chicken Lickin'.
But Chicken Lickin's a thing? I thought that was made up from something.
No,
like
from
a TV show.
This is a very cool series. I need to see if I still have my book. But I mean,
we need to find that book and your Goosebump books and then just bring them all here.
But it's just basically really absurd versions of, I think they had like Princess and the Pea, but the pea was a bowling ball.
That I for sure remember, the Princess and the Bowling Ball.
And I'm pretty sure, I know Little Red Riding Hood was a big thing. What's the chicken that makes all the bread and no one helps her?
Henny Penny?
Hickety Peckety?
I'm not sure, but there's a version of that, and I think she ends up getting eaten by the wolf from Little Red Riding Hood because she's too annoying about her bread. It's just, I got it from a book fair when I was little, and it was just, I always thought it was hilarious.
Scholastic, come back.
Come back to adult versions of book fairs.
The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, another book I read in college. Great, great book. Extremely depressing, deals with race and child sex abuse, but very good book that, you know, one of those books that you have to read in school that makes a huge impact and mm-hmm. you actually really enjoy. And then as a political science major, Animal Farm in 1984. Gotta love George Orwell. Hated the ending of 1984.
Oh, God.
I hate literature where it's like, here's an inconvenient ending that you hate and we call it good because it makes you hate it. And I wanted, in 1984, I wanted Big Brother destroyed, and in the end it just was very...
And now we carry it around in our pocket.
Very disappointing. Yeah, no big... Yeah, let's that's a whole different podcast.
Yes.
But that's my list.
Yay. That's a great list.
Very learned list.
Yes. And now we will meet our second author that we had the privilege of interviewing, Mr. Andrew Kerr, who is another sci-fi author.
What's his book?
His book is The Parallels of Time.
Parallels of Time. I'm excited. We're going to put that in here right now.
Hey, everyone. I am here with Mr. Andrew Kerr, who is the author of The Parallels of Time, to talk to him a little bit today about his book.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What about yourself?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being here and sitting down with us. I guess we'll begin with the burning questions on everyone's mind. Well, the first thing we'd like to do is ask all of our guests and all of our interviewees about a couple of things that they nerd out on.
Okay. A couple of things I nerd out on. I love to watch sci-fi movies, fantasy movies. That's my biggest thing. TV shows.
Nice.
I'll even be writing and just have it playing in the background.
Yes.
And so sometimes that's a little bit of a distraction because I'm getting into the movie and I'm watching it and not typing. And I'm like, better stop that. second thing I nerd out on is I do go to Comic-Cons, and yes, I will dress up.
Very nice.
Last one I did was a Darth Maul, which took me forever to get the epoxy on the horns going around the head.
Wow.
And I love to do that and just hang out with all the geeks there.
Yes, the cons are so much fun.
They are. And you can again. And you can meet so many fascinating people there, especially around your area. And then you're like, hey, I didn't even know they had a club like this or, you know, organization. And then you get involved in that. So,
yes,
really good. And the last thing is, of course, reading a lot of them. And I mean, I started on that when I was a kid and started reading the Star Trek books. And I was like, oh, this is on that episode, only this goes into a lot greater detail. So that just makes it all the more interesting. So,
did you have a favorite Trek series, or did you just read whatever you could get your hands on from the Star Trek series?
I read mostly what I could get my hands on, but based on series, it would be Next Gen.
Awesome. Very good choice.
I was never a big Deep Space Nine person.
Same. I can agree with you on that.
I've gotten through the first couple seasons. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it can be there, just not my favorite.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about your book, The Parallels of Time?
A lot there. It involves a lot of time travel. There's parallel dimensions, magic and mysticism, and mutants, of course. Gotta have mutants in a good story. Yeah. It's basically taking place in 2085, where the Earth has been at war with an alien race known as the Taraxians. Uh-huh. And they pretty much conquered the planets in their galaxy, and remnants of those people have fled Earth. And there they formed a Starfleet-esque type organization. And the hero comes in, and he's basically one of the last surviving people of a race of people who have created both mysticism and technology and merged them together.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taraxians pretty much are led now by his half-brother. And they pretty much got a hold of a lot of powerful weaponry, came in and pretty much killed all his race.
Oh, no.
And so now he's has kind of a personal grudge against them. And it's the story of him and his team that work together to try and defeat them. But along the way, they've encountered, you know, getting blasted back in time to Camelot, going into parallel dimensions and finding doppelgangers of themselves that aren't so favorable.
Mm-hmm. So,
that's a lot of
awesome.
I like to think so.
Yes, yes. And it sounds like there's definitely a lot in there to keep the readers entertained.
Yes.
So what, if anything, was your inspiration for this novel?
I was inspired a lot by other authors such as like Raymond Feist. I loved his fantasy work. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Star Trek books and even Asimov for a lot. So they were big inspirations. I loved all of them.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Can you talk a little bit about your publishing process?
Right now, I'm sending it out to publishing agents trying to get representation. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, it is on Amazon and has actually been doing pretty good in sales.
Very nice.
So I'm very happy to hear that.
Yes.
But I am trying to get mainstream published. Mm-hmm. So, but they all say you got to get an author to get mainstream published nowadays.
Exactly. I feel you right there. So what time of day do you write best? Are you night owl, morning person, midday, or just whenever it hits you type of person?
Oh, I'm definitely midday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely midday. I get up and usually the night before I've jotted down ideas and yes. whenever they come to me, or in the middle of the night, I'll wake up and go, ooh, that's a good idea, and write it down. And then the next morning I go through it and organize it, and then it's okay, let's go.
Very nice. I am definitely, I'm morning. I could do midday too, but I like to get it out when I'm most energetic, because by nighttime I have ideas, but it's just, I just don't want to do it.
I'm asleep. It's like you always get the ideas at night. And so you're like, no, I can't do it then.
Exactly. You know, and also sadly, writing's not paying my bills yet.
Oh, so. Exactly. Yeah.
Got to be sure I'm ready for that in the morning.
It'd be nice if one day, if we get published, both of us can, hey, yeah. guess what I do for a living? Author.
So I see the Parallels Times is book one. And is that Starion? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
In the Starion yes. saga. Do you know how many books you would like to see in the series?
Right now, I actually have plans for six. I've got the outline for all six. And I finished the first one, and the second one I'm currently revising right now. But the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, I'll go in there sometimes and go, ooh, I got an idea for that one, and mm-hmm. type in a few paragraphs. And then it's like, okay, so I've got all this started now. You know? But then, of course, you know, in the midst of writing book two, I'm going to three and four and going, well, that's not going to work now. Totally delete all those paragraphs and rewrite them.
I like to work on series myself, and so I definitely know that feeling. Or like I write something down, like that was really good, and I'm like, crap, that is not in continuity with the last. How can I make this work now?
Or you're writing the second book and going, well, how I know I want to do that for three, so how am I going to work that working too?
Yeah, you got to set it up.
Like, now rewrite.
Exactly. So it sounds like, bonus question that I didn't send you beforehand. Sounds like, are you a plotter, or do you just
off
the top of your head?
Yeah, I do a lot of the plot, and then I do the characters and weave them in. It's like, okay, well, you know, I know what I have plans for you, so I have to start dropping subtle hints mm-hmm. that might be what might be happening here. It may not, you know, so it's like sometimes one thing I like to do is throw the curveballs, like, oh, you think this person's going to do this?
Uh-huh.
Yes, again.
Yes, I like to do that as well. And I feel you on that. I can do a little bit without a plan, but having the plan is so much nicer as you go
along. Oh, yeah.
Especially, I'm sure, as you can relate in a series.
Exactly. You have to know, where are you going with this? And that's what I'm saying. I already have the plot for book six, and I'm still writing book two. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
how about getting there?
What do I get from book two to book six? I was like, I got to have certain things at least I know are going to be in the books, so I can at least say, okay, gotta get that.
Very nice. They mentioned you're on Amazon right now. Is that where our listeners can find your work?
Yes, it is.
Very
nice. On Parallels of Time on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. By Andrew Kerr, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
All right. Well, that wraps up this interview. We really appreciate you sitting down with me, giving us a little taste of the world that you have created.
I appreciate it as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And listeners, definitely give his work a check out. It sounds really great. And I will, for sure, when I am able to get it on my list, because my list is forever going on things that I'm reading, I will definitely give it a check out myself.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew Kerr, for that interview. Shane, thanks so much for sitting down with our authors. Guys, unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, my list has been lost. I personally blame Shane and Tom. I think they're trying to sabotage me, but there's no video cameras to record the evidence, so we will never know. But I wanted to go ahead and give you my list real quick. Number 5, Caliban Cove by S.D. Perry, which is part of the Resident Evil series. It's got Rebecca Chambers in it, which is why I love it. Next is Welcome to Horrorland, which is number 14 in the Goosebumps original series. That was probably what defined my childhood and made me obsessed with horror stuff. Number 3, American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Not sure how you say it, but that's how I said it. Number 2, Good Omens, also by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Both really, really great books. I suggest you read them. There's also some movies, miniseries, television show, whatever you can watch about it as well. Number 1 on my list is Tales of the Slayer, volumes 1 through 3, which you can technically get in one book, which is all 3 volumes. They are stories of slayers that came before Buffy, and also some stories that include her and her gangs. Listeners, I am very sorry that this happened. I'm not sure exactly what happened or where it went, but we're making adjustments. We're trying to make it work. I'm throwing it in here, and now back to the podcast with me saying something about my final book.
Slayers Dies is by Elizabeth Bathory's hands.
Who may or may not been a vampire.
Who might have been. It did not sound like she actually was. Mm-hmm. I think she was just an evil person.
But I mean, I feel like that's a question we ask in her life too. Yeah, was she a vampire or was she just evil?
Of all the titles, I would love to be a count.
A count? Count Thomas McDonough of Watuga.
Just anything where I can have a cape that I pull in front of my face.
I know a guy who makes capes regularly. So
is it you?
It is me. So maybe we can make that happen for you. But those are my books. That's my list. A little basic, a little simple. I do have some honorable mentions.
Yes.
Ready Player One. They just recently had a sequel come out called Ready Player Two. I've only read the first chapter of it, but I'm already really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. This also was made into a movie, but So I started reading the book, and then Corey got one of those free tokens from Audible. So I ended up getting an audio version of the book that was narrated by Will Wheaton. And I loved it. Like, yes. I loved listening to it. He did a really good job. I didn't put this book on my list because I didn't read it. I listened to it. So I felt guilty. I mean, so I didn't want to put it on there.
I've got a lot of Audible books. And I mean, it's
hard for me to read. I have dyslexia. Sometimes one page can take me 20 minutes to read just because I have to keep going back and making sure I read the words right. Audiobooks just make it a little bit easier for me. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, any kind of cheat and workaround I can do, I will do.
I mean, you're still taking in.
Yeah.
You're still making the pictures in your head of what's going on, and that's what reading is. So I don't think we should put limits on what a book is.
No. Because
my mom always was a big proponent for me in high school that comic books counted for reading.
They do.
I read a bunch of comic books, and my mom would be like, no, he did read. Mm-hmm. There were just 20 comic books instead of one book.
And I mean, yeah, you're not making the pictures up in your head, but you're enjoying art. When you read that's why I read comic books, is I love like drawings of crazy monsters.
I was going to put this next book on my list, but I decided to save it for a different topic. Uh-huh. But I am going to at least put an honorable mention of my favorite Harry Potter book is The Goblet of Fire. That was the first book that I ever read that made me feel like I was smart because it was so big,
so long.
And I was actually able to read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not a big reader, like I said, in school, and I sat in the back of school and read for 2 days straight, didn't do any schoolwork, didn't talk to anybody, didn't do anything, and the teachers just let me because I was not a good student, and I was being quiet, and I was reading. And that's a very fond memory of me. Also, Corey and I don't know if you guys know this, my husband Corey, we went to the same middle school.
Did you?
Yeah, No way.
Mm-hmm, I was in fifth grade when he was in eighth grade. And he worked in the library as like a library assistant. We also rode the same bus home, but we didn't actually know each other. But we didn't meet until college. But funny enough, Corey still remembers when The Goblet of Fire came out because we were at the same school when that happened. And that's how I was able to read it.
I got one question. Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? Did you put your name? Dumbledore said calmly.
You know, and like I said, Goblet of Fire, the Harry Potter books, which of course were written by Dumbledore. Love that series. And then the last book, for me, it's a sports book, which is a little out of character for me, but it was called Iron Man. And it is by an author named Chris Crutcher. I'm not sure how it said. We had to read that in my junior English AP class. And it basically, it was about a student who was a swimmer, which I was a swimmer in high school.
Yeah. So what are you talking about that being out of character?
Well, because it was about swimmer, but it was basically about somebody who was training for this thing called the Iron Man. There was also a gay character that was brought up into it. And as a young gay kid, you don't see that.
No.
You do now. But when I was a young gay kid, you didn't see that very much. And so I also got to meet him. He came to our local library back in where I grew up and, did like a Q&A, and I have a signed copy of the book from him upstairs still. But that was just, it wasn't like super, super important to me, but it was also still important enough that I wanted to mention
it. Of course.
But that's my books.
That is really awesome.
That's my learnedness.
I love it. I think we all had great lists. I think it's been a fun episode.
We should do favorite band books. Did y'all ever have, band book week in school?
I don't know if we did.
Yeah, James and the Giant Peach was banned because it had the word damn in it.
Yeah, there were a bunch of books that were just banned for
whatever reason.
Oh, we read James and the Giant Peach in 7th grade. I hated it.
Yeah,
we read
an actual book in school? What?
I think I read it, too.
We did get to read.
Read it in the sense that I listened to them talk about it in class.
Reread The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe when I was in 5th grade, which I always thought was super cool. That was also one of the few times when I was in school that we did like a project afterwards. Mm-hmm. Mine was so good that it got put out into the hallway. I did a news report as if there was a newscaster, and it was during the scene where the wolf is trying to get the kids and they're up in the trees. Susan and them are up in the trees, and is it Peter, Edmund? Whichever one has to jump down and fight it with the sword. It was like, and this just in, he just jumped from the tree and blah, 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 blah. And it was, it's funny how those things stick with you.
Yes.
Well, y'all have anyone you want to shout out?
I'd like to give my buddy Jimmy, Willow Mountain Woodworking, a shout out. We're going to hopefully be doing some kind of Ren Faire related woodworking stuff here soon with him. Also, those two cosplayers I mentioned last time, Cassandra Cosplays and Old Fashioned Nerds, really, really been enjoying their stuff, really been inspiring me to get my stuff together, get my sewing machine back out. I did clean up my area. Haven't made anything yet, but I did clean up my sewing area, and I'm ready to go.
Yay.
I'm going to pick out some fabric, get some stuff ordered, and start working on Ren Faire stuff, because I am so excited for this year.
I straight up had a dream we were at the Ren Faire.
It was probably a prophetic dream.
Better be.
What about you guys? Anybody else you want to mention?
I'll shout out all of our author friends, the two we interviewed this week, and Mason, of course, Mr. Barry K. Nelson, Mackenzie Falls Series, and Evil Walks, Mr. Andrew Kerr, that's K-J-A-R, and his novel, The Parallels of Times, and of course, Mason Blevins, 34 Degrees, find them all online, great writers. Great works.
Now, are they all available at, Amazon?
They're all available on Amazon. I think Mason's available a few other places. But, Amazon's the main thing where you can find them. Or just, Google their names. They'll come up. Their work will come up.
You'll be able to buy their stuff, I'm sure. Just Google it.
My shout-outs, Bulbasaurion, Pokemon artist on Instagram.
Didn't they just do a Mewtwo, a rainbow Mewtwo?
Yes, and it was so sweet. Beautiful. Yes. She's selling these Bulbasaur pins that she made, custom. I guess it's Bulbasaur between Bulbasaur and Ivysaur, because it's kind of like the bulb opening up. She's selling those right now to help out with rent, support artists. She's from the UK, so I'm not sure what shipping is like on there, but
can't be that bad.
No, it's
not. It's worth it.
But always trying to support local artists. First 10 Minutes, another Instagram that I've been in communication with, but they do the first 10 minutes of video games, of a bunch of different video games, and they did Win Back COVID Operations.
Didn't they just do your game?
Yeah, I had requested that, and that's just, if you've listened to our favorite video game episodes, that's one of my favorite video games of all time. So they did the first 10 minutes and gave us a shout out. So thank you so much for that. And then who else do we have? Oh yes, Shane, you've been listening to the What the Famicon podcast.
I have.
They are trying to get 10,000 downloads by their, I believe, 2-year anniversary in June. So, you know, always trying to spread the love around podcasts. They have some nice short 10-minute episodes. So check them out, get them some downloads, and help them meet their goal. And then, of course, I've been talking about a lot. Follow us on Instagram, at Total Nerd List.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, all those. I've been doing the Instagram. I think we've all kind of been, Shane does it as well. And so we've been a bit more active on our Instagram. So that's basically the original source of all of our social media material right now. But please follow us. We need followers. It's going to help us out a lot as a podcast. Please follow us. And then, of course, if you ever have any, you can DM us on any of our social medias. And then we also have totalnerdlist@gmail.com.
Yes. And as always, we won't forget our good friend, Jordy Marie Games. Check her out on Twitch, Facebook as well. Playing Animal Crossing. I think she's doing some Resident Evil on Twitch
she's
and some other things.
She's playing the very first Resident Evil remake. Not remake. It was the remastered version.
Remastered, yes.
Remake. It's hard. It's a really, really hard game, and she is killing it. I've been watching her in the evening. Actually, I became one of her supporters on Twitch. I was one of her first 10 supporters, so I have a little first icon next to my name on there. I really love Jordy, and I really love that she's playing stuff that, you know, is I'm very passionate about.
Yes.
Animal Crossing she was doing for such a long time, and it took me a while to jump on the bandwagon. Of course, I love that now. I don't want to quote it. So don't, if it doesn't happen, don't be mad at me. But I do think because she's on Twitch, she might be playing some Dead by Daylight now.
Ooh.
We might be able to jump on with her and start playing some Dead by Daylight. I think we should at least talk to her and maybe see what we can do. But Jordy Marie Games, Facebook, Twitch. Go
yes.
Give her a like, give her a follow, and tell her Total Nerd List sent ya.
That sounds great. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.